There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1 Weekly. My name is Steve Falb, and I'll be the host of the show. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, and Clark Rogers is on vacation. This is podcast number 299, August 21st, 2008, and this F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads get you the F1Weekly.com website for the ads that interest you. From cars to careers, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them, you know you want to. And thank you to Yahoo Ads and to Steve Falb. And I welcome to the studio Nasser Hamid. How are you doing today, Nasser?
Very good, sir. Thank you. Good evening to Mr. Falb and bonsoir to the empty chair of Duke of Dijon.
And today's show, we're going to do a quick Valencia preview with some drivers' comments and a technical look at the track. Ferrari's doing double duty. Renault working hard to get to fourth. We'll have Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi, which will include a WRC update from J Streets, and the piece de resistance for today's show, an interview with racing legend Mario Andretti. We'll also have a forum update and so much more. So let's take a quick look at Valencia. Brand new track. Going to be a blast. I was looking at the pictures on GPU update today and just going, ooh, why couldn't they be there? Looks like a really well laid out track. All the goodies and necessities that you needed for an F1 track. Have you seen many of the pictures?
Yes, I have, and I think it will be a very good event because the city, the community, the country is behind it, so I'm excited.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Was looking over a quick technical preview of the track. Basically, they said a lot of similarities between this track and Montreal and Bahrain. Kind of the same low downforce levels that you see at Montreal, similar braking conditions that you see in Bahrain. The car's going a lot of quick straights, not a lot of quick turns.
I hear the Mediterranean sand on the beach is the same as the Bahraini sand.
Let's hope there isn't too much of it on the track. You know, it seems to be a nasty little thing. Basically, it's saying the general car setup is drivers need a responsive and well-balanced car. Don't they always need a responsive and well-balanced car? And good braking stability is important.
You know, I saw an image of the track, what it's like a car is going away. And out there, on the other side, you can see the deep blue sea.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks beautiful. So I hope they have some, video coverage where we can see a pan shot. And, you know, they have a bridge also where the cars will cross.
Yeah, exactly. That looks really cool. Yeah. I was looking at one of the pictures that they were showing. It looks like there's one sweeping turn where the turn goes around the edge of the bay, and the grandstands are just looking out over the track into the water. It's just like, wow, that would just be really cool to be able to sit there and watch that.
Yeah, I've seen some pictures of the city of Valencia. Also, looks very, very muy bueno.
Muy bueno. Yeah, they're saying that Bridgestone's going to bring the softs and super softs. Let's hope we don't have the same kind of problems that we had in Hungary with those two compounds. The softs graining up really bad. And it's almost going to be kind of a crapshoot. I know that it looked to me in most of the photographs that the surfaces were brand new. So it's going to all be about getting the track rubbered in. But and so they don't know how abrasive the track is going to be. It didn't look like it would be too bad. New asphalt typically isn't that bad. And then they said that the engines are only expected to be at full throttle for about 54% of the lap. So, you know, good lap time is going to be, you know, not so much based on peak power, but on being able to get out of the corners quickly, which was similar to what we were seeing in Hungary. You know, if you can't get out of the corners fast, then you're going to be kind of screwed.
Yeah, but if they can do a Formula One race at Monaco, that place is so cramped, then yeah. You know, they can do a race anywhere.
Yeah, well, one of the nice things they were saying about the Valencia track versus Monaco is that it's a lot wider. I take and there'll be a lot more opportunities for passing.
Yeah, and there are a couple of long straights. So this is going to be a good race. I'm really excited.
So it should be fun.
Yeah, and actually, I don't know if you have this here noted down here. I put down here some notes that this is the first real street track to join the calendar since Phoenix in 1989, Phoenix,
yeah,
Arizona.
I'm not surprised at that.
Yeah, and then the length of the circuit, do you have all that details?
No, I do not.
Okay, it's 3.38 miles, and they're going to do 57 laps. And I read somewhere that the lap time is going to be about 1 minute 38 seconds.
Yes, but I read that someplace too.
Yeah, and they're going to have 14 right turns and 11 left turns. So we should have a good Formula One race.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. A couple of comments from some of the drivers. Fernando Alonso is looking forward to an interesting challenge when the circus stops in Valencia this weekend. He expects all the drivers to be quick. And it's true with most street circuits, there are always interesting challenges, and the sensation of speed from inside the cockpit is incredible. And that really doesn't surprise me because you're down low, you're in amongst the, you know, you've got barriers on both sides for the entire track, unlike a lot of set courses where you usually get a little bit more of expanse between the track and the barricades.
Question, last 10 days I've been on the road here and there, everywhere in the air. Is there any talk of rain?
I have not heard anything about weather, so I'm guessing no. We're looking at the Mediterranean in late summer. It's probably, if I'm not mistaken, it's very similar to the weather that we get in California this time of year. Yeah. Rain being a very rare occurrence. Nico Rosberg says that he expects his car to be fast and that his car is well suited to this track. So it looks good. And then Nakajima saying that, as at Monaco and Montreal, our car goes well on these kinds of tracks. So the Williams boys think that they're going to have a good weekend. And they need one. They've been having a lot of challenges. Yeah. Their best finish, I think, their last time they were in the points was Montreal with Nakajima finishing eighth. So,
yeah, and Nico really needs a good finish. You know, I mean, Nakajima is looking as pretty good compared
as
to him
good
right
as.
Now.
And their cars have been finishing. They just did not know top end. They're not being able to keep pace with anybody. Kimi looks to start well while in France. He's hoping that the team will get the car up to speed quickly so that he can get as many laps in as possible with the car at peak performance. And if, as most people, they need to be more consistent, he says, with the race.
Yeah, I think it's time. He's waking up by now, I think.
Well, he was saying that basically that this season was going to be a dogfight down to the end, just like it was last year, and that, you know, he doesn't feel himself counted out until the last lap of the last race, which bodes well for his fight for the championship this year.
Yeah. I'll be very surprised if he does not win. I'll be very surprised.
It'll be interesting to see. I'm really looking forward to seeing, watching practice and seeing how quickly people get to grips with the course and getting the car set up and how well they, you know, how quickly they get up to speed with a brand new track with really very little input. I know that they ran some sort of race a couple of weeks
Spanish
ago.
Spanish Formula 3 and GTS. Yeah,
yeah, so they got a little bit of information, but those cars being significantly less underpowered compared to, say, a Formula 1 car, not going to be a lot of data that they'd be able to use.
But it's a Herman Tilke design, and now with so much technology and, you know, things at stake, the only thing I can see going wrong, and I hope it doesn't happen, is that when they do the practice on Friday, for whatever reason, tires or track or temperature, we have another Indy 2005 scenario.
Yeah, well, I don't see the Bridgestones getting to the point where they're going to fail. The thing that you had at Indy is that you had a turn that is so different than anything else that we see in Formula One anymore.
Yeah.
The loads on those and one team was basically pushing the limit on the poor tire, which kind of put everybody off.
Thank you, Jarno, truly.
Yeah, thank you. Exactly. Him and Ralph. Robert. Ralph.
Oh, it was a race car driver by that.
Maybe if I mentioned by half.
Okay. Okay.
You pick him up real quick. Robert Kubica going into Valencia is really hungry for some more points. They felt that they did reasonably well in Hungary, and they hoped that it was a turning point for their season.
BMW had quite a bite early part of the season, and now it's, I don't know if they're falling behind or the
other teams are just
pulling away further.
That and the fact that Toyota and Renault are really starting to put a little bit of pressure on them. I know that Pat Simmons was talking about that BMW seems to be kind of falling off and Toyota kind of rising, and they're trying to, you know, keep up with Toyota and stay between those two teams.
Yeah, but, you know, don't get misled. No, I'm not saying that you are, but don't be misled by a podium finish because, you know, look at who dropped out and, you know, blah, blah,
well,
blah.
Well, if you go back to Robert Kubica's victory in Canada, he really only wins because of Lewis Hamilton's mistake in the pits. Yeah. If Lewis doesn't take out himself and Kimi, Robert does not win that race.
But he, at that time, he at least had a car that was good enough for a regular fifth and occasional podium finish.
Yeah.
And if you put yourself in that situation, you're going to pick up a win or two, and you take the wins as they come.
Yeah.
But I don't think Toyota... I mean, if you take Fernando Alonso from Renault and put somebody else, then they are really, you know, like... It'll be really mid-pack. I mean, it's him that's bringing the car there. And that's, you know, yeah. You know, the interesting thing, if I just a side detour on the forum, there is this thing like listeners, you know, top 10, you know, whatever, most aggressive, complete package, most exciting. And I was thinking, and I'm thinking, you know, it's not my official response, but I got to say, you know, for most exciting driver, I have to say it will be a very close call between Hamilton and Alonso, and I say Alonso because look what he's doing with this package.
Yeah, exactly.
He's extremely good in the rain, and it's just unfair to the racing fans that he's not in a competitive car.
Yeah, well, he was actually saying that he's hoping to add or subtract a second lap off of his times by feeding off the adrenaline in Spain. And you know, the home crowd giving him that little extra boost, so that should be interesting to see.
Yeah, and it's a street course where, you know, it might be possible to at least bring the car maybe into the top two. I mean, he's been on the front row before, but thanks to fuel. But I hope there is some rain so we can really have a street fight.
That would be really interesting. I don't know that I actually maybe next year when they're there, mm-hmm. but for the inaugural race, I'd like to see it dry just so we can get an idea what this track is like.
But I just have this feeling that we're going to have a race or two, especially China, Japan in the rain.
Well, Fuji,
yeah.
What are the odds in Fuji? We got about like 4-1 that it's going to be wet. Has any Formula One race at the Fuji circuit ever been dry?
We'll have to look into this.
That would be an interesting one to look into. One of the other things I picked up for today's show is Ferrari's talking about the fact that they're stepping up their design effort, production effort towards their 09 Challenger that they're actually going to start committing. We are entering the production phase, said Costa, the Aldo Costa, who is, he's the director, tech director at Ferrari. So basically now he says that they're still working on their 08 chassis, but now that they're really starting to get down and dirty with putting together their 09, and there are several things going on with the 09 chassis that a lot of these teams are having to deal with. One, the addition of the KERS system, the kinetic energy recovery, and also the fact that they're going to slick tires, which means you've got issues with suspension, and also the strip down of the amount of aero doohickeys you can have. It says this makes the puzzle more complicated than ever in putting together a car for next season. I find it interesting that they're actually advertising the fact that they're, you know, drawing back or upping their efforts towards their 09 car while they're still in the hunt in 08. I don't think that you need to tell your competitors that. But it's kind of a given at this time of year. Everybody's pretty much doing the same thing. You've got to start really working towards the 09 car. We know that what happened to Renault in 07 was a lot based on the fact that they spent so much time in 06 developing the 06 car that they neglected their 07 chassis, and it ended up hurting them the following season.
No, but it was not a bad deal. In 2006, they did win the championship,
yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, the hombre was gone.
Yeah, exactly. Get it while it's hot, so to speak. And then my last little bit for today is Renault's looking to score. Trying to get to fourth place on the Constructors' Championship. They're only 4 points back of Toyota at this point, I think that if they can get the, you know, consistently score points in the final races, and if Piquet can continue his, I wouldn't say a resurgence, his surgence, basically his coming out party in the last couple of weeks, I think that would be, will do
his
them.
His coming out party?
Yeah, exactly. Holy, took him half the season to get there. But they really feel that they have the fourth fastest car on the grid and that they're actually not that far behind the BMW, but they're basically started too far back in the hole to make that a realistic goal. But they think they should finish the season in fourth.
You know, talking of Piquet, I read a news item that Renault was supposed to confirm his whether they will take
up his option for next year.
August. Now they have delayed till September, and there is rumor that they might, you know, it's one of those things. If Alonso is staying there, then he may also stay, but he may still be replaced by Romain Grosjean. And if Alonso goes, then Grosjean will come in. And if Grosjean comes in, Piquet's party is over, I can tell you right now. Yeah. Grosjean is very quick, but he's making a lot of mistakes in GP2. But if you can run with a guy who has 6 years of experience in your rookie year and you're 22 years old, you got something going.
Yeah, you got something going for you. And I think it's more of a position. I don't think anything's going to shake out for Renault between now and September as to whether or not, you know, Fernando will be there. And I think it's maybe more to see whether or not Piquet is worth keeping, period, as even a third driver for next year, more than anything. If he can not make mistakes, can be competitive, I'm sure they'll sign him for next season. Whether or not his seat is guaranteed is a completely different animal.
Well, you know, what is going against him most of the races, not being quick against Alonso, not many people will hold that against you. I mean, running half a second behind Alonso or a Raikkonen is not bad if you're a second driver. But if you're not quick and you're still making a lot of mistakes, which he has done, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, being more than a half a second behind your teammate, where he's looking, you know, it's like, well, you know, okay, we'll give Alonso a 6/10. Why are you a second behind him, you know, kind of thing.
And the other guy who is, I don't know what's going to happen to him, is that Mr. Bourdais may get the same treatment from Gerhard Berger, the same love that Scott Speed got around this time last year.
Yeah, but I think that's a completely different scenario for Sebastian versus Scott, because there was a lot of things going around where Scott was actually making himself annoying. Where I'm sure Sebastian Bourdais is not that kind of driver. He, you know, he's very professional. You know, he works hard with the team. He's the only thing I can see going against him right now is that he's still complaining about getting to grips with the car, which doesn't seem like a really good thing to be saying when he's been in it for what this will be the fourth or fifth race.
No, plus he has a lot of experience in driving big cars. You know,
yeah, so
four-time champion across the pond. I mean, if that's the problem, then you know, hey. I tell you, there's a lot of reports that Sato may come back to Formula One. I mean, he may be squeezed out, you know.
Yeah, that's a good
possibility. Not that I want that happen. But
Sato brings a lot of sponsor cash with him.
Yeah, and possibly Honda engines, too.
Exactly. Gerhard was talking about, do they have Ferraris for 2010?
No, you know, I'm not sure on that.
I thought that 2010 was the last year that they were in under contract with Ferrari for motors, but I can't remember.
But you know what
certain.
These contracts mean?
Yeah. Well,
two lawyers have a cup of coffee and some cigar, and boom.
And Gerhard,
we have
you know,
a new contract.
Gives them $1 million, and that contract over.
Everybody's happy.
Exactly. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with Motorsports Mondial.
F1Weekly.com would like to thank our sponsor, San Jose Label, Inc. San Jose Label is a custom manufacturer of labels that makes a variety of products. 1-4 color process labels, alphanumeric barcoding and UPC labels, blank labels, serialized asset tags, hazardous labels, bumper stickers, pin feed, static cling, hot stamp labels, and many others. Please go to www.sanjoselabel.com for info, samples requests, and graphic design. Or you can call to telephone 408-436-8221. San Jose Label is the one-stop shop for all your labeling needs.
Welcome back to F1 Weekly. Steve Faub here, your host for today's show. And now we spin the globe and run around the world for the world of motorsports with Motorsports Mondial and the King of Karachi, Nasser Hamid. Nasser?
Who's the black private dick that does a sex machine to all the chicks? You're damn right. Man that would risk his neck for his brother, man. Can you dig it? Who's the cat that won't cop out when there's things you're all about? Right on. You see, this cat chef is a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
Are you sure you're not Clark Rogers?
Yeah, I'm channeling him.
Okay. Well, Mr. Rogers has requested me to say greetings on his behalf also, so I have to say today, greetings and racing regards from Ventura Highway to the streets of Valencia, where, as we just discussed, Formula Uno will be in action this weekend. And the music we have played was our tribute to Isaac Hayes, who passed away last week. Classic Shaft. And talking of Shaft, looks like Bernie may give Max the Shaft by trying to abort FIA's launch of Formula 2 with his own low-cost entry-level series called GP3. Reports are suggesting Bernie will badge the existing International Formula Masters, which just started a few years ago, as GP3. And the International Formula Masters spec cars are powered by Honda engine, and cost of running a season is about €450,000, and this series is now, you know, already in the second or third year. So
yeah, it's already in place.
Yes, they've taken out the bugs or whatever they had there. And this €450,000 is far more realistic than the proposed €200,000 for Formula 2, as Max would have it. €200,000 for a season of motor racing is too good to be true, even as a bargain basement. Underline the word basement, please.
Yeah, basically it's one set of tires for the entire, you know, it's one car, one engine for the entire season. There's no way you're going to get it. You'd almost spend €200,000 just to pay a staff for a season.
If you do karting in the United States, top-level karting, that will get you about half the season.
Yeah.
Think about it, karting.
You just to have the bodies on hand, you know, I think Max breathing
Hunt.
A little bit too many, or maybe he was breathing too many fumes.
Okay. Now we go to Bad Boys of Budapest. Police are investigating rip-offs of racing fans who come to the Hungarian Grand Prix. In one case, three Swedish race fans were ferried to a topless nightclub instead of their hotel and were forced to pay a very high, large bill.
Huh.
The Budapest Baba gets physical if you don't pay the bill. And this is one bad Hungarian rhapsody, I say. But from what I've heard, Budapest is a very beautiful city, very historical, and racetrack is pretty good, too.
Yeah. Just a matter, it's probably, you can probably run into that in almost any big city in the world if you run into the wrong guy at the wrong moment.
Yeah. Kimi to be licking good. World champion Kimi Raikkonen will be honored by his country on a stamp. A sheet of new stamps will be presented to him at Spa next month before they are officially released. So maybe when he wants to leave Ferrari, he can just use his own stamp and send a postcard to Luca. I leave.
Yeah. Thank you for the good times. We'll talk to you later.
No, that's too much for him. You know, I leave. Given his...
Why I leave? Why just goodbye?
Yeah. Ciao. Ciao would be perfect for him.
Exactly. Ciao. Ciao,
yeah.
Bella.
Ex-Ferrari team manager Cesare Fiorio has given his two liras on what Ferrari should do to win the world championship, saying their chances are being spoiled by errors from the command post and by the drivers. Making a statement like by errors from the command post, no way he's going to be back at Ferrari. He used to work for Lancia, he was a rally driver and all that, and then also Ferrari team manager. Ferrari, according to Mr. Fiorio, should decide who to put the money on, Massa or Raikkonen. According to a survey by La Gazzetta dello Sport, 56% of the readers believe Ferrari should put their money on Kimi.
Yeah, until that gets up to, you know, like 65, I wouldn't put my money on either of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this thing will sort itself out. I tell you what, I mean, any mistake by any of the drivers now or a mechanical issue, it's going to be very, very costly.
Very painful.
Yeah, but you know what goes around comes around. I mean, Massa had one when he had the race in the bag.
Well, look at last season where, you know, Louis was having such a great season until the mistake in China.
Back-to-back, yeah.
Exactly.
Back-to-back. Unbelievable.
Fell apart.
Another Andretti in the Hall of Fame. And talking of Andretti, I have a little bit more on him later. Another Andretti in the Hall of Fame. Michael Andretti has been inducted into the Motorsports Hall of Fame of America. His Papito Mario, of course, was inducted in 1990. Our congratulations to Mike and the mechanics of his IndyCar team.
Well, Michael's been very important to IndyCar racing with Andretti Gru Racing since he came back basically from his quick stint in Formula One.
Yeah, but there's a lot of turbulence in the AGR team. I'm sure you've been reading about or hearing about it. You know, Andretti Green, Racing Green is Kim Green, brother of Barry Green.
Okay.
Apparently, Kevin Savory, who's the other partner with Michael, him and Michael don't get along with him. So according to Robin Miller, who most of the time is correct on these things, they're trying to buy him out. And another thing I heard from Robin Miller is that the AGR will take over, or whatever the name will be, they're going to take over the Team USA franchise for not this coming season, which is starting in A1GP, but the
following season.
Yeah, and put Danica and Marco in it. So we can have Danica.
A1GP. It would be interesting to see, especially see Danica race in an international race against what would amount to better competition and also in a different car.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just going to keep the U.S. from ever, you know, winning that championship, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing when Somerton won in China this year. That was their first win.
And I think the biggest problem, at least what I saw for the first season and a lot last season, that if with A1GP, it helps a lot to name one or two drivers and stick with those two guys the whole season. The first year in A1GP for USA, they had, three, four drivers that year? And there's way you're going to get any kind of consistency out of the team and car if you don't have the same guy going every week.
Yeah. There is quite a few good young drivers in America that, you know, unfortunately these kids don't have big names or big, bags of cash. I mean, Somerton is one of them, Carl Skerlong from Washington. Mm-hmm. You know, these kids should be given opportunity. Okay, next we have a case of Scottish sour grapes. Paul Di Resta, who is cousin of Dario Franchitti, claims he should have. This is what on wind tunnel Dave Despende's fired up segment. This is what ticks me off. He's claiming that he should have Sebastian Vettel's seat in Formula One. This is based on Di Resta beating Vettel in the F3 Euro Series in 2006, which is true, saying he shouldn't have gotten there before me. You know, here is the thing. Life is not fair, and so don't expect motor racing to be fair. But this is, I'm not saying he's not a bad driver. Don't get me wrong. But when people make these kind of comments, you know, my thing is, wait a minute. If somebody helped out Vettel because he's German and Germany is a bigger market, fine and dandy. I can understand the political side. Okay, but if you're so good, then you should be winning a lot of races in DTM. Or wherever you are.
Exactly.
And that's what bothers me, you know.
Yeah, well, not only that, but you come out and you make statements like this, people are going to look at you and go, do I really want that guy racing for me?
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, there are many drivers who beat Michael Schumacher in junior formula. There are many drivers who beat Senna or Raikkonen. So, you know,
there are even other guys that are in Formula One who, you know, got their hats handed to them by individuals in individual series, and those guys didn't make it to Formula One. So,
yeah. Yeah, so.
Welcome to life in the fast lane.
Yeah, I was a wee bit pissed off on this comment. But we wish everybody all the best, you know, including Paul Di Resta. Okay, Singapore Grand Prix in the Fast Isle. Supermarket chain Cold Storage and Shell Oil Company organized an F1 team race on August 14th in one of their grocery stores. Complete with race queens and checkered flags, the human-powered supercars tried to outrun one another, and the challenge was to collect Singapore dollars 289 worth of groceries in 2 minutes. So at least they're building up, doing whatever it takes to promote that. Maybe that's what they should do here at Lucky's and save on.
Get Safeway to pony up some promotional money.
Yeah, promoting Formula One races, you know.
Yeah.
At least people will know what's going on. You know, some years ago, you met my friend Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yep. When we go there, his brothers from back east come, and we have like a group of 6-7 guys and girls or whatever. And I kid you not, this was not the first year, but maybe the second or third year of the U.S. Grand Prix. We were at this Bob Evans restaurant, and this lady who was serving us, she had no idea there was a Formula One race in town.
Huh.
I kid you not.
You'd think that she'd know that there was a race in town at least.
Yeah, it's but that's the way it goes.
No wonder Bernie was pissed.
Yeah. But still, it would be nice to have a Formula One race here, you know.
Yeah, it would be nice to bring one back.
Yeah. Now they have a MotoGP at Indy coming up. Okay, by the way, on the Singapore Grand Prix, over 95% of the tickets for the night race have been sold out. Singapore is expecting more than 40% of the race goers to be from overseas countries. And, you know, because of their location, I expect a lot of Japanese, Australian, and the usual British fans and the Kiwi with their Finnish flags running around.
Yeah, it's a good place to go, you know, because you can extend your trip and, you know, do some sightseeing while you're down there, especially.
Yeah.
And I know that Singapore is really a big destination for Europeans, too.
Yeah, but just don't spit out your Wrigley gum on the street.
Don't spit on the and don't get caught with any dope.
Yeah, okay. Is Liu Tsi staying home?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm just kidding. I mean, I shouldn't say that.
Oops.
It's a joke.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Vito Antonio is a good guy. Okay, what else we have here, sir? I think we have some more information. Okay, Laguna Seca. Okay, as you know, I was there over the weekend on Saturday, and I ran into a very charming, ever-smiling guy on the at the track.
And I said, hey, and it wasn't Clark Rogers?
I asked him, why. You said, you look familiar. Who are you? He said, I'm the host of F1 Weekly.
Ah, so you did run into him.
Yeah, I did run into Clark Rogers, and we spent some quality time together. And, of course, he wanted to see all the blue cars, you know, even if they were not Matra or Renault. He just wanted to see a blue car.
A blue car.
I swear, he told me, I want to go and see that blue Tyrrell. I said, yeah, go ahead. At least it has an elf sticker, you know.
Exactly.
He'll feel somewhat Francais. Okay, at Laguna Seca, Timo Glock won the Scion Celebrity Race over Jean-Pierre Jarier and other F1 names in the race with Johnny Herbert. And I had a chance to talk to Johnny Herbert a little bit. Patrick Tambay was there, Alan Jones, and Danny Sullivan. At Silverstone, the British F3 local lad Oliver Turvey won both rounds past weekend and now leads the championship by 9 points. From Mexican driver Sergio Perez, and this weekend the series will be screaming in the streets of Bucharest.
Well, that's the Formula 3 series, right?
Yeah, the British Formula 3, which is one of my very favorite series. A lot of drivers come from there. It's very high profile, you know, thanks to the interest in motor racing.
Yeah, exactly.
So this weekend they will be screaming in the streets of Bucharest in the land of Dracula, Romania. They also go to Spa and Monza, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
And you know, this Mexican kid who won a lot of races in Formula BMW, you know, he's leading the championship. Hopefully he will move up to Formula 3 British. And my, you know, goal really is, since we're not doing this for fun and games, is as these kids move up, we have a contact where we can go and talk to a guy. Today he's in Formula 3. Exactly. A media motorsports relationship.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, so that'll be very nice, you know. I remember I was talking to Bobby Rahal a couple of years ago at Laguna Seca, 2 years ago, and then there was a lot of talk of him going to GP2, and I said, hey, man, if he's going there, Moa is going to show up at a race or two, and, you know, you got to take care of, you know, your half-home boy. Yeah, exactly. No, it'll be good to have access to these people and get some feedback, and one thing leads to another, you know, in terms of knowing more people. So I'm really looking forward to the next 2-3 years where we may have some, you know, inside contacts on the Grand Prix circuit.
Yeah, let's hope they remember us.
Well, that's why I always ask them, don't forget the poor people. I said that to Graham Rahal, actually. Don't forget the poor people of Paris. So we'll see what happens. Okay, we go from Silverstone to Scotland, Knockhill, British Touring Car Championship. All three races won by a Spanish manufacturer, Seat, who are part of the Volkswagen Group. Jason Plato won the first two races, and the final event was won by Darren Turner. And again, I saw this news item only on one website, ItaliaRacing.net. BMW are reported to be thinking about switching from World Touring Car Championship to DTM.
Mm.
And, of course, we will keep an eye on this story.
That would hurt touring cars because they don't have that many manufacturers.
Yeah, but the BMW's point reported is that in a world touring car, they are racing against Seat and Chevrolet Lacerdy, which is, I think, a Daewoo.
Yeah.
They want to be associated with high-quality names, you know, like Mercedes, Audi.
Yeah, and obviously, well, basically compete against their competition.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, very smart, Steve. I like that. Okay, and what else we have? Okay, Bruno, Casey Stoner. I know you watch MotoGP every now and then. Did you watch any of this?
I didn't catch any this weekend, no.
Yeah, what happened is Casey Stoner crashed out from the lead in the Czech Grand Prix, giving Valentino Rossi an easy win and a big points advantage in the championship. But I got to tell you something, man. Once Stoner crashed out, Rossi was long gone. But there was a tremendous battle for, you know, second, third, fourth.
I think I read something on the forum. He was talking about the battle between 3 and 9 in that race was just awesome.
Some of the passes, man. Some of the moves. I mean, these people are really machismo. I really enjoyed it. Okay, ex-world champion and current Honda rider Nicky Hayden is expected to join Ducati next season. So Kentucky kid goes to Bologna. That's crazy. Yeah. Okay, Indy Racing League. This just came out today. Indy Racing League, no Marlboro, but still smoking. Penske cars on fire. No, we're not talking about seven second place finishes and second place in the championship for private dancer Elio Castroneves. The transporter for Penske Racing caught fire in Wyoming on its way to Sears Point, also known as Infineon Raceway, for this weekend's IRL race, and both primary cars for Castroneves and Ryan Briscoe were toast. Good news is nobody was hurt, so they will be in their backup cars.
Isn't this the second IRL transporter that's burned up this year?
It has. Some other team also burnt.
And it was one of the smaller teams last time. They didn't have any backup cars. Yeah. Basically, everybody pitched in to get them into the next race.
It was, I think, one of those transitional teams, as they call them, and that happened in Texas.
So, but yeah, it's... Fire marshal needs to be checking out those transporters.
Yeah, maybe the spirit of Gerald Forsyth is. You know, he was very unhappy.
Spirit
of Pat Patrick has come back. Okay, NASCAR boys were in Michigan, and cousin Carl Edwards won both the nationwide and Sprint Cup race for Jack Roush and Ford. And
I
Monty
just have such a hard time with
what?
Guys winning both races. It's like, the guys in the top tier shouldn't be racing in the lower tier.
Yeah, you say that. But you know what they are racing next weekend?
Yeah, they race every
Bristol.
Week.
43 cars on a half-mile track.
I hate that. That's just... Yeah, you're lapping the field after the second lap. Yeah. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay, and Monty, our man Juan Pablo Montoya, is running out of gas. Texaco has pulled the plug on their sponsorship in NASCAR after this season. It will be great to see percolated Colombian Python back in IndyCar racing. Monty and DP, a match made in heaven. And, you know, some years ago, Texaco merged with Chevron, and Chevron is actually based out of here,
Northern California.
Yeah, so pretty sad that they are leaving motor racing, but I'm sure they'll be doing something else. Okay, let's see what else we have here. We talked about Kimi, Valencia, Singapore, Max and Bernie, Bad Boys.
Then we got the Rally of Deutschland.
Yeah, the Rally of Deutschland, briefly. I know you have
more. I've got more to fill in after you've given your little two bits.
Yeah, and then I have some experience I had. We'll discuss on that. Okay, Rally Deutschland. In 7 runnings of this event, only one name appears as the winner. Sebastian Loeb.
Might be.
Yeah, Sebastian Loeb. The Citroën driver winning again this year and now leads the championship by 4 points over Mikko Hirvonen. The Ford Focus driver was fourth in Germany. Loeb's victory also marks 150th win for Pirelli in World Rally Championship. Their first win came in the 1973 Rally of Poland. The winning Fiat Abarth 124 Spider was driven by Achim Wambor. And when I read this, I said, oh man, I haven't heard this name in quite a while. Yeah, he was quite a well-known driver. And of course, his co-driver was our beloved Jean Todt.
Yes, we also have a WCR update from our friend Jay Street, and he writes a couple of F1 related WRC rumors, as he calls them, rumors based in truth, sort of. Kimi has publicly said when he retires from Formula One, he would like to try rally. Ford boss Malcolm Wilson wasted no time in offering up a test in the works Ford. Ford's M Sport is no stranger to the Flying Finns. Currently, They have the two top finish drivers under contract, as well as having just retired former two-time world championship champion Marcus Groenholm. So that's very interesting. Now on the broken asphalt in WRC, this is, in all reality, Sebastian's home event. He basically grew up 300 miles. He is French, but grew up only 300 kilometers from the German rally headquarters. When Sebastian first brought his Citroën team, it was as an asphalt specialist. He later became an all-around master pilot, as he is today. The German event has only been on the calendar for 6 years, and Sebastian has won it every time. In fact, the only challenge Sebastian ever faced was from his teammate, Danny Sordo. The Citroën's lead was so commanding that before the end of the second day, they had both backed off the mapping on their motors to save them for their next event. To make matters worse for Ford, their number two driver, Latvala, who has been getting private tarmac lessons from a circuit racer, crashed out of the event on the first day and was never in points contention. That's just got to hurt. Ford's number one man, Mikko Hirvonen, was challenging for the last podiums, but only to be beaten by Ford's B-team number two driver, François Duval, who had been brought in just for the event. And rumors were rampant around the service park that the Ford may evoke team orders to have the tarmac expert Duval step aside, handing valuable championship points to the Ford's number one. It didn't happen. Team boss Malcolm Smith let the boys fight it out on stage. The record-setting seventh straight victory in Germany puts Sebastian up in the driver's standings by 4 points over Ford's Hirvonen. Maximum 18 points for Citroën team brings an 8-point lead over Ford in the manufacturer's standing. Danny Sordo's strong drive see him leapfrog over Subaru's Chris Atkinson for third in the driver's points. The last weekend in August, we'll see the rally WRC teams travel to the Southern Hemisphere for the Rally of New Zealand. See you on stage, Jay Streets. Thank you, Jay, very much for that in-depth coverage of WRC. We greatly appreciate it. And now for a few moments from Laguna Seca.
Yeah, you know, it's what happened on, I think, Friday night or very late in the week. I found out, Mr. Rogers sent me an email that Mario Andretti was going to be in a sort of a press
Meeting, conference,
yeah, you know, for media people between 9:45 to 10:30. So I scooted over there. You know, I've admired the guy for a long time. Tremendous history.
He basically he's the first driver I can remember from my youth.
Really?
when he won his first Indy, and you know, I had his Indy car, and I think around that time, Texaco or one of the other big oil companies were giving away, you know, with a tank of gas, the little car, and my dad bought one home for me one day. So I was, you know,
one of the. So you've had your brush with motor racing long before you met us.
Way, way back when I was a kid. I remember watching the Monaco Grand Prix on Wide World of Sports. I used to love motor racing when I was very much younger, you know, because of the excitement, you know, fast cars. Ooh. But,
So anyway, I go there, and I was in this press conference. Unfortunately, my goal was to record the whole, but the way it was set up, the people who were asking questions did not have a microphone, so it was not going to work out, and I didn't want to create any scene there. So anyway, he talked about a lot of things. You know, people were asking him. I asked him a few questions also. And highlight of the day for me was definitely to see Mario Andretti drive his 1978 World Championship-winning Lotus 79. In that beautiful black and gold JPS colors, and Mr. Rogers taking a lot of photographs. He put one on the webpage also. And this car makes a beautiful sound, and Mario looked like a Mario in that car. And I made a comment to him, man, I mean, you went out of the pit. He went out of the pit like he was in a race, like Schumacher was going to pass him just now.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy, he's a born racer, you know. It was very
no such thing as slow.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just a beautiful car. The car is 30 years old, still looks like a fairly decent competitive car.
Yeah.
Beautiful noise, and to see that helmet and all that, just very good. And I remember when I was talking to Mansell, I asked him, Mario Andretti had called him his worst teammate. So I asked Mario, you know, if he could explain a little bit on that. And he basically said that, you know, with Ronnie Peterson, you could sit down and talk, or with other teammates, you know, plan a strategy, help each other out, you know, develop the car or sort out the car. And he said with Mansell, he said, the way he was saying was interesting. He said he came and he just grabbed all the best engineer, best all the technicians, when there was no need to do this. And he said we never had a meeting with him. So basically what he was saying is that there was no, you know, that he never had that team spirit.
No esprit de corps. He basically was in it for himself.
Yeah. And he said when he had a great season, everything was happy. You know, he was very happy. But when things did not go his way in the second year, he started criticizing the same people. And on a sidebar note, you know, I was reading an interview with Keke Rosberg, which is in one of the recent motorsport magazine. And again, we're not trying to badmouth a person, just reporting on, you know, what different yeah. people say, reference to the environment we are in right now, talking about Mario's comment and Mansell. And Keke Rosberg was good friends with this Italian driver, Elio De Angelis, who unfortunately was killed in France in a testing in 1986. And he said that when Mansell was trying to get to Williams, he was at Lotus, so Rosberg called Elio De Angelis and said, "How is this guy as a teammate?" And Elio said to him, "Do not take this guy. This Mansell is poison."
Huh.
But he said in his time with him, he had never had a problem with Mansell. Huh. So, it really depends who you're listening to. Or what
yeah, a lot of it, too, depends on their, you know, what their interaction with him is.
Yeah, exactly, and what the performance level was. And then, you know, Mario, he said something very interesting. He was talking about, somebody asked him about Marco going to Formula One, and the thing about, you know, when I also had an opportunity to do a one-on-one interview with Mario Andretti for 10 minutes, which I was looking forward to for many years, I'll tell you, and I say this as all respect to him, I was feeling like a 15-year-old kid, and I got the impression, the passion he had, the way he was answering a question, like I was talking to another 15-year-old kid, the two 15-year-olds have just seen their first Formula One race, sort of yeah. race. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just, and that's what I like about when I deal with people who have love for motor racing, you know, whether it's 3-time world champion or a kid in tennis in Seattle or, you know, anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the passion people have, which I enjoy very much. But anyway, going back to Marco, he said something that I had always believed in, and coming from him, he should know, and I'm not convinced that I was on the right track. He said, you know, you cannot teach someone to go faster. He said, you can hone their skills, and with the experience, you become a better driver. And I've always had that belief that once you sit into a car, first time in your life, you bring whatever fancy word you want to use, talent, God-given talent, or, you know,
yeah,
package.
Spatial, spatial ability.
Yeah, and if you're on a scale of one, like, you know, basically my thing was that Ralph, you can go to any school and Rob Wilson or whatever, Racing Academy, Jim Russell. A Ralph Schumacher will never be a Michael Schumacher. You cannot train Fisichella to be a Fangio or a Massa to be a Moss.
No, ultimately, everybody's talent peaks out at a certain point.
Yeah.
You know, all the guys in Formula One have the ability to win races and championships if they're in the right package. But some guys are just faster.
Yeah.
They just have the ability to push that car as far as it will go without taking it off the track.
Yeah. And then, you know, some gentleman asked him, of all the races, he has won in everything.
Yeah.
He said, of all the races you have won, what is the most important victory for you? And he said that the most important win for him was his victory in 1978, the Italian Grand Prix at Monza, which gave him the championship. And this is a race where his teammate Ronnie Peterson was killed. But unfortunately, victory was snatched from him for jumping the start along with Gilles Villeneuve. They both were given a one-minute penalty. So Mario Andretti took the win, but with a one-minute penalty, he dropped back to sixth, and Niki Lauda got the win. And then I asked him for his thoughts on Colin Chapman and Enzo Ferrari, two of the people he drove for, and it just was interesting. You know, he says with Colin Chapman, I'm saying this because this is not in the interview that I did one-on-one, so I'd like to share what he said with listeners. He said with Colin Chapman and Enzo Ferrari, it was one thing. These people demanded performance now. That was all. They were not looking for any excuses. I can't find the brake pedal or what is, you know, the the tires
like not getting to grips with this car kind of thing.
They had no room for it. I mean, they demanded performance, and now. And he said with Colin Chapman, he said, I always knew that if you get on his side when he was on the uptake, then, you know, sky was the limit. That, you know, once his whatever package he or, technology he was trying to embrace and incorporate into his car, if it worked out, then nobody's going to catch you.
Right.
And it, what happened, in, that's what happened in 78. But the things they tried in 79, he could not even get into the, it was a hard time getting into the top five. So it was very nice to hear from the man, you know. And then somebody asked him, when you went to Monza and put the car on pole in 1982, that was my first race that I went to. He said, how did that deal come about? Who called you? And he says, you know, Mr. Ferrari called me himself. Can you imagine? A racing driver cannot get a better compliment than Enzo Ferrari calling you.
Exactly.
Would you like to drive my car?
Exactly.
Yeah, and just to hear it from the man himself, it's just like a very incredible. And I told Mario, man, hey, I was there as a young kid. I'm 23 years old, and living in beautiful Karachi in those days. And I will never forget. I mean, I knew his history then also, that he was born in Italy for all practical purposes. He's an Italian man, then he came here. And for me to be there, you know, and this on Saturday, the commentator, there used to be an English guy, I think his name was Marsh, Anthony Marsh, or Anthony Marsh, I believe was the name, with that very heavy voice. Like, you know, same guy now goes to all the races, Bob Constanduras, and he had a very heavy voice. And, of course, the Italian announcer, when they were saying that on pole position, Mario Andretti of the United States. I mean, it was just unbelievable chills I had. I mean, just you know, it's just what it took for him, you know, to come here, to do what he did here, went through, you know, whatever he had to go through, and to go back there, win the championship, come back to the U.S., and then get a phone call, hey, come and drive my car.
Yeah.
And then put the car on pole position. Like, man, I mean, I have chills right now, as you can see. That was just a fabulous, fabulous conversation. And I met his PR assistant also. And, you know, it's hard to get 20 minutes from people like him. So, and by the way, if I may share a personal thing, before I came to the U.S., I used to write to a lot of racing people in this country. And there were two or three people who corresponded with me on fairly regular basis. Mario Andretti was one of them. So I have a connection with him going back 20 plus years. And the thing I really want to see is the trophy he got for winning the Italian Grand Prix in 77 and what he got for getting the pole. Because, you know, like you said, Monza is my favorite track. It's also my favorite track. So what I'm trying to do now is I'm not going to bug him at every race, but maybe every 3-4 months if I'm at a race, I'll ask his assistant if I can get 5-6 minutes. And every time, get in like 5-8 questions, and then after 3-4, you know, we'll have a 1 hour
interview
session.
In 8 increments.
I'll tell you, man, I mean, you talk about a man with a passion for motor racing and all those achievements. And it, and now, you know, we're going to play that interview, and Mr. David Tapia, our illustrious producer, was asking me to write an intro for Mario. I mean, the intro for Mario is the name, Mario Andretti.
Well, yeah, but knowing that, but to list his accomplishments is a complete segment for motorsports memories.
Yeah, you know, he was IndyCar champion in his rookie year. I mean, the guy has won Daytona 500, Sebring, and just like about anything. And, of course, any of his competitors, when you talk to them, probably if you ask AJ or Bobby Unser or anybody, who was the toughest hombre? This is one of the. If it's not the first name, it's definitely the second name. And all those people in Formula One who race against him, that name comes up. Yeah. I mean, you know, name has been used in songs a few times. So it's just. I was very, very happy to be able to sit down and talk to him face to face.
So let's do that interview right now.
Grazie.
Okay, Mario, 30 years ago you won the world championship. Today you're driving that car. What kind of memories came racing back?
Oh, all of the good memories that I had with it. Every time I sit in a cockpit, it's the third time now in the last few years in this car. It just, you know, it's my element, and it's easy to sort of start, you know, just enjoying what I've enjoyed in the past. And it's a great opportunity, especially right here, Laguna Seca. You know, this is one great venue. For me, you know, with wonderful memories besides, and a great racetrack. You know, this is actually the first time that I drove a Formula One. I can say I drove a Formula One car around Laguna Seca as well.
In 1977, you won two important Formula One races, one at Monza, land of your birth, and the other in Long Beach, land that gave you comfort, fame, and fortune. And in both races, Ferrari was second, Niki Lauda. Which race meant more to you, which victory meant more to you at the time?
Well, at the time, each one was equally important. However, when I reflect back now, I think from a standpoint of just my own private pride and overall feeling of fulfillment, it was Monza, you know, because that's where I saw my very first Formula One race when I was very young. And that's probably one of the races that cemented my decision to just pursue this career.
Is there anything you remember from that race?
I remember just about everything. And all I know is that I was rooting for my idol Alberto Ascari, who had a very tough day against the Mercedes of Fangio and Moss. But he showed so much heart. And actually, I was so excited because I knew that he was in an inferior car, yet he was still driving 103%, and that was something to watch.
Well, that's the heart and passion. I remember you from your days in Formula One. Marco, in Formula One, there's a lot of talk, a lot of hope. Would you recommend for him or any young aspiring American driver to do a season of two in GP2 or Formula 3 before getting into the Piranha pool, that is Formula Uno?
Well, I don't think there's a set formula, you know. Number one, right now, Marco is in a maximum formula here. And, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, well, you know, it's not a good training for Formula One. Except that once you have a feel for powerful racing cars and so on and so forth and the top competition, if you go to another discipline like, say, Formula One, and the team really embraces you, and they give you the opportunity to really, before the following season starts, to really get familiar and confident in the car. It would be better to have a season and know the circuits. But you know something? That is not necessary and totally the thing that's required. Because historically, you have, look at Hamilton, for instance. You know, he's never been to, last year he was never at Montreal. First time ever, and you cannot test in Montreal. So he first saw the circuit, you know, through a video game probably first, and then through the eyes of a racing car when it was time to go official practice. He won the race. Why? Because he had the full confidence of the car, and any good racing driver will learn the circuit quickly. And I think he's at the stage that he could go directly to a team and just start just the real thing.
Will he listen to you or Papa when it comes to going to Formula One?
Well, I think he better listen to me when it comes to Formula One, I think. And I think he probably does. I mean, he has his own way of expressing himself, and it should be. But at the same time, I think deep down he for sure has this as the ultimate goal in his career. And now it's all about having the opportunity. You know, he has to put together some really good results and really continue to impress, you know, before somebody would be interested, in looking at him for Formula One.
Your last season, full season in Formula One, was with Alfa Romeo, a magical name in motor racing. That's where Signor Ferrari started. Did you work with Carlo Chitti, and how was that experience?
Well, I did work, of course. Carlo Chitti was the chief engineer and team manager and everything. And you know, I had driven sports prototypes for them as well. The biggest problem that I encountered in the 1980 season was that they didn't really read the rules properly, you know. And it was very gray area. And everybody was somewhat cheating, you know, with the hydraulic systems, you had a box that you had to clear on the way out of the pits. But then all of a sudden you released the hydraulics and the car dropped 4 inches in ride height, you know. So, and And Alfa Romeo thought that that was cheating, so they didn't want to do it. But we suffered tremendously because the car, I think, was capable of really being very competitive. And because of that, it was a very frustrating year for me, and a year that one of the years in my career that I certainly want to forget.
In Formula One, what is your favorite track apart from Monza Autodromo?
Well, I had many tracks that I just loved tremendously. I mean, Kyalami was a good track for me. You know, the ones that I really enjoyed, but it's wherever I could win. You know, I had a policy with me that I would never say this is favorite, this is not, because then your mindset would be wrong. To me, I treated them all as my favorite, but obviously, the memories of a win are always the positive memories, and those are the ones that I consider, you know, the ones that I enjoy the most.
You raced in Formula One against some of the greatest names in the sport, making your debut on pole position in 1968. Give me the two toughest drivers you raced against in Formula One, please.
I don't think I could really single it out to just two toughest drivers. Each era has the individual that's a yardstick, and I remember for me it was very, very meaningful when I did my very first, stint in Formula One, even part-time in '68, when I put the car on pole and Jackie Stewart finished second. And he was the man in those days. And then when I won my very first Formula One race in South Africa, Jackie Stewart was second. And then I won the next non-championship race in Ontario. There were two 100-mile races. I won both, and Jackie Stewart was second both times. And that told me something, gave me a lot of confidence that, you know what, this day I beat the best. And so I think I have a future here, you know, with a proper team, proper equipment. And it was very important. And other times in the United States it was A.J. Foyt, then there was the answers. In Formula One, again, I can look back, it could be James Hunt, could be, Niki Lauda, could be, you know, many individuals that I, you know, even don't come to mind at the moment, you know, but like you said, I was fortunate enough to race with the very best of the different eras, and that is something that I treasure.
Talking of James Hunt, do you remember what happened at Dutch Grand Prix 1977?
I remember that very well. In fact, that's he and I had a big disagreement over that, because I think I made a good pass on him on the outside, and he never expected me to do that, because that's not usually the way the passes are done in Formula One, and he ran right over my wheels. He just totally ignored the fact that I was there, and then he says I wasn't supposed to be there. I said, well, I think you got it wrong, my friend. You know, as long as the tarmac, you know, somebody's going to be there, and you have to respect that. And we had a disagreement over that, of course.
Finally, how about a message to listeners of F1 Weekly? We have a worldwide audience, and I'm sure everybody would love to hear from you.
Well, you know, Formula One is my ultimate love. It always will be. And you know, it's wonderful. To me, it's heartwarming to see so many fans that follow Formula One, and I think the experts, so-called experts, do underestimate how much love, how much of a following there is in Formula One in the United States, and I'd just love to see that increase by having an America to root for, and I hope our boy Marco is the one.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mario, for speaking with F1 Weekly. We'll be back right after this message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1 Weekly. Steve Falb, your host for today's show. And actually, I'm going to throw it back to Nas for a second. I heard a rumor that you got to take a couple laps at Laguna Seca.
Laguna Seca in Alexis. That is true. Long story short.
Ooh, sweet.
Somebody introduced me to this gentleman from, and actually he was French-speaking Argentinian working for Lexus in LA. And he said, you know, would you like to take a couple of a lap in a Lexus, you know, one of the IS models? So in the sedan. So I sit there in the front seat, two other people in the back, and this gentleman gave us two laps, full blast. And the track is so beautiful, you
oh,
know.
Yeah.
You know, there is a portion when you're going up towards the corkscrew,
yeah.
All you see is the blue sky. And I was thinking, man, what a great feeling this would be when you are coming at 150, 80 miles yeah. per hour. I mean, unbelievable.
Rocketing into the sky.
Yeah, and as far as the car is concerned, the Lexus IS 08, I believe, is the model. The Pursuit was relentless and fast, a fabulous vehicle. Very good
Yeah, it's their top-end sports sedan.
Yeah, and yeah, very good power, and it just going through those corners. You know, Laguna Seca is always turning up and down.
That would just be a blast.
Oh, what a feeling.
Exactly, the ultimate roller coaster ride.
But, you know, finally some sad news on this Motorsports Mondial. Dino Toso, he was the head of aerodynamics at Renault, has died after a four-year battle with cancer, only 39 years of age. So very sorry to hear that. His previous racing stints included working for BMW and Jordan, where he engineered their first win at Spa in the Rain in 1988 with Damon Hill driving.
And now kind of for the wrap, we got a quick forum update here from Ye. Thanks, Ye. This week's snippets from the F1 Weekly Forum. The summer break has meant a slow week on the forum, but there is a well-posted thread on the assessment of the current Formula One driver field and discussions about can Toyota take BMW and Ferrari's woes? Are they on the decline? There's a thread on Flavio's beach invasion, which resulted in a candidate for the most disturbing picture of the year. Go ahead, take a look at Flav's beach thread. Yeah, I saw that picture. That was pretty scary. Rumors surrounding Takuma Sato's return to F1 has revealed a strong Sato-net supporter movement. The Massanets are still hurting from his hungry engine failure. Clark, can you please fire his engine for Valencia? Well, I'll take the... Since Clark's not here. Felipe's engine? You're fired. And then finally, a happy birthday to CFD Racer. And that's all for this week. Keep up the good work and keep on posting. Also in this weekend's wrap-up, or this week's wrap-up, SF F1, as always, is meeting. And they're actually going to have a brunch and raffle this week. Again, as usual, they're meeting at 9:30 for the pre-race, and the flag drops at 10. Overtime Sports Bar and Grill, 398 7th at Harrison. Phone number 415-863-18 or 1688 in San Francisco. The brunch is RSVP, so be sure to call before you go.
Clark is not here. We need a Rubinho also.
Rubinho.
There you go.
Let me see what else we got here. If you are interested in sponsorship, advertisement, or cross-promotion in the show or on our website, contact us at info@f1weekly.com. I'd like to thank all the individuals that make this show possible. Nasser, myself, Dave Tapia, Clark Rogers, Desiree, and everyone else.
Toby.
Including Toby and all you listeners. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.